Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and I am an associate editor with Drug Topics. Today, I am joined by Steve Callahan, Senior Director of Advisory and Insights at MMIT, also known as Managed Market Insights and Technology. Welcome and thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate you having me.
Awesome. So before getting into our discussion, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, your background, and kind of how your career journey has led you to MMIT?
I was always interested in science. I went to school, studied bio, got my master's in bio. One of my first jobs of grad school was working in a lab at a startup. You know, working at a startup, I got exposure to kind of other aspects of the business side of science that I found really interesting. And just because of that exposure, decided wanted to pursue it. So got a job at a consulting company and focused on payers and market access. And from there, that brought me to MMIT. So, and here at MMIT, it's a lot of primary research that I do, just focused on payers, market access, and HCPs, et cetera.
Awesome. So we can get into our discussion surrounding biosimilar access amidst the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. Can we start by discussing biosimilars and the impact they've made on healthcare? Can you give us a brief explanation of just what biosimilars are and then touch on kind of how the pharmaceutical industry perceives them?
Great question. So looking at like the pharma industry, I think we've heard of generics before. So a product is available on the market. Eventually, the patent runs out and a generic product becomes available that's a lot less expensive. So with biologics, those are treatments that are just a lot more complicated than the other products. So we might call the other products as small molecules. So you can make those in a lab with chemistry, et cetera. But with biologics, you actually need some type of organism to synthesize them because they are proteins. So you can't just create one by mixing chemicals. You actually have to have a process that creates this protein structure, and it has to be a reliable process. So all of the products that come out are similar and will have similar effects. Biosimilars are kind of comparable to generics, but it's different because with generics, the molecule structure is just has to be the same. But with biosimilar, the protein structure has to be the same. There's a lot more that goes into it. So that's kind of what the biosimilars are. It's comparable to a generics coming out for small molecules, except it comes out biologics when their exclusivity patent expires.
Awesome. So in the context of prescription drug pricing and benefit distribution, how do biosimilars differ from other types of pharmaceutical products?
So a lot of biosimilars are either injectables or they're IV injected, or they're administered via IV. So a physician will have to administer it in those situations. So we think of traditional drugs as like an oral or maybe some type of ointment or something you can get from your local pharmacy. Managed care, or I should say insurance companies, they just manage the different products differently. So they might have a formulary, like a pharmacy formulary for their more traditional self-administered products. But some of these physician-administered products just fall on a separate formulary. It could be a more expensive specialty formulary. So just like the tiering and payment structures are different depending on how patients are able to administer the products.
Now that we touched on kind of biosimilar pricing and what really they are in the marketplace, can you discuss the Inflation Reduction Act or the IRA? What are the IRA's key provisions that are set to make the biggest impact on the pharmaceutical industry?
Great question. So IRA had a number of provisions. So one is the fact that Medicare is now going to negotiate on prices. So that's something that is starting to roll out in the near future. In 2026, the first set of drugs are going to come out with these new list prices. So this is the first time that Medicare is actually negotiating on the drugs themselves. Of course, there's been negotiations in the past about like rebating, et cetera. But this is the first time that the actual list price of drugs are being negotiated. So that certainly has a very big impact. I think another big impact is there's this new rebate, inflation-based rebate. The rate of inflation is also known as the CPI. So this is called like the CPI penalty, where if a drug's price increases faster than the rate of inflation, the manufacturer of that drug actually has to pay that money back to Medicare. So whatever that differential is above the inflation rate, they have to pay that amount that was paid above that back to CMS as a rebate for that drug. So those are two, I think, key provisions that have an impact overall. But a couple things about the biosimilar were also mentioned in the IRA. So there is proposed to be a more beneficial biosimilar reimbursements. So I believe that the reimbursement rate is 106% of the ASP for traditional drugs. So for biosimilars, they've actually increased that 2%. So they'll get 8% to prescribe biosimilars because there is a slightly better reimbursement rate from CMS. Also, I had touched on the fact that the Medicare is now negotiating on prices. How that works is CMS looks at the top spend of drugs overall. So it's the price of the drug time multiplied by the number of patients using it. And from that list, they identify the drugs that they're going to negotiate the price on. But there's actually an exclusion where if a product is expected to have a biosimilar come out within 2 years, they can actually be excluded from that list. What's interesting is that it's not automatic, where a biosimilar manufacturer has to request that. They have to request that exclusion. So it is there, and it's meant to continue to incentivize manufacturers to create biosimilars because they want competition. They don't want to de-incentivize any manufacturers from coming out with a biosimilar. So that provision is there to actually help biosimilars coming out by allowing that product to be excluded from the Medicare price negotiations. Really interesting is that Stelara was on that list, and there's actually a number of Stelara biosimilars. I was surprised to see Stelara was on the list of products that CMS negotiated with, because in theory, those biosimilar manufacturers could have petitioned for that product to be excluded, but that didn't happen.
Awesome. I think that was a really good kind of overview of the IRA and how that connects with biosimilars. So speaking a little bit more on that and kind of going a little more in depth on what we are predicting the price and demand of biosimilars, basically, can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Like kind of what, as far as the pricing, like what patients will see at the pharmacy?
Sure. With biosimilars, we, you know, there's been a change in pricing of biosimilars since they first came out. Like in the grand scheme of healthcare, biosimilars still are new. The first biosimilar was approved in the US in 2015. So we're looking at just about 10 years of them being available. And when the first biosimilars came out, there was a big misalignment for the anticipated pricing that the insurance companies thought they were going to get versus what was there. So I think, you know, and speaking to a lot of these people that made these decisions at healthcare, at insurance companies, they were anticipating they were going to see like steep drop-offs in pricing, similar to what you see with generics. But that wasn't the case, because there's a lot goes into creating a biosimilar. The takes a lot longer. It's like $100 million versus maybe $4 or $5 million for generics, so much more expensive, and the process to make them is a lot more expensive. So while the first biosimilars did come out slightly like lower than the reference product or the original biologic product, it wasn't at that 90% discount that a lot of the insurance companies were expecting. So that was, you know, that was a big hurdle that I think some early biosimilars had, was just kind of getting more alignment from insurance companies on the pricing. Over time, we have seen that the price of biosimilars have come down. And that does end up saving patients money, because these are more complicated products. So a lot of times the their insurance companies have them on a specialty tier. So with specialty tiers, those are generally a copay. So a patient has to pay a percentage of the drug's price. So because the price of biosimilars have started to come down, that relates to more patient savings because their co-insurance rate is off of a lower price. Additionally, a lot of insurance companies are creating multiple tiers. So past, there might just be a single specialty tier, and maybe the coinsurance rate was 20 or 30%, and it was the same for all specialty products. Now there's multiple tiers, which actually have lower coinsurance rates for patients. So they might have an option of paying a 10% coinsurance for the price for a preferred product versus maybe a 20 to 33% for a non-preferred. So just the fact that there's also more, options for lower coinsurances for patients and lower prices overall have helped patients pay a lower out-of-pocket rate.
Awesome. Great. So I kind of want to go back a little bit. So obviously you mentioned how biosimilars are only about 10 years old. Forward to the future, what is the industry kind of attempting to do with biosimilars going forward?
I think in the recent years, biosimilars have just become a lot more known that that now this is something that's occurring in the market by maybe more everyday patients who aren't as in tune with the pharma industry. So there's been products like with like insulin or Humira, like these are big name products that received or that had biosimilars launch that were that newsworthy events. So I think just the fact that this is a term that's being more understood, and since they've been in the market for longer, there's just a lot more acceptance of biosimilars, that these are similar products to what they're what a patient has been receiving. Also in recent years, there's been biosimilars that came out that this interchangeable designation. So one thing that separated the initial biosimilars from generics is that a generic has this interchangeable designation, meaning if a physician prescribes you the brand name at the pharmacy, they can just switch it to a generic product that's a lower cost. And because they've been shown to be the same, that's allowed at the pharmacy. With the first biosimilars, that wasn't the case, where a physician had to actually write specifically for a biosimilar. If they put the original brand name on it, that's what the pharmacy was allowed to give. They couldn't switch it to anything else. But now that there's this interchangeable designation, I think that's eased a lot of the concern that maybe some patients who would otherwise be hesitant have had, because now it's showing that this is indeed the same output, the same outcomes as what was a patient was already receiving. So I think that the factors that are making more acceptance are just the fact that there's more awareness of biosimilars, that there's more data, more just overall public experience showing that the outcomes haven't changed for patients who've taken a biosimilar versus an originator over the past 10 years. There's been this new interchangeable designation, and then just some very high profile products to get biosimilars. And there's a lot more in the works that are going to get biosimilars in the near future. So I think that really this is just leading to more and more public awareness and acceptance of biosimilars, and that we're going to continue to see this be a space that just grows as time goes on.
Awesome. I think this has been a great conversation. I just have one more question kind of with this like biosimilar revolution, so to speak, and with like the IRA, a lot is kind of coming down the pipeline with the pharmaceutical industry. So from your perspective as a representative of MMIT, what are you doing right now to kind of help dispensers that are really specialized in biosimilars?
Yeah, so I would say something that we've really started to put a lot of effort in is just understanding the real world data, using real world data sources. So looking at claims data is a big one, and really just trying to understand a lot of nuances for different indications. So what has been successful for other products to come to market? Like what were some of those strategies? Like what was the uptake of use that other products have seen? And just really trying to understand the changes in the market dynamics that led for some products to be successful, and maybe some to, could have had a better launch. So I think that area is where trying to be able to understand the real world data sets so that we can quantify that into something insightful and strategic. We also do a lot of primary research. So we talk a lot with members, different healthcare stakeholders. So we talk with insurance companies, or we call them payers. We talk with practice managers. We talk with different types of healthcare professionals, and just trying to understand all the different nuances within the space. So trying to understand what the different payers are looking for, what it would take for an HCP or healthcare provider to want to prescribe a different product or similar, and just what are the challenges.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate you taking the time today and joining us.
Thank you, Brian. It was great connecting today.